The House City Affairs Committee will please come to order. Would you please call the roll?
Representative Millet?
She's excused.
Representative Price Tompkins?
Here.
Representative Gaddis?
Here.
Representative Hughes?
She's excused.
Here.
I believe she's online.
Here on the phone?
She's online on the phone, listening in.
Representative Isaacson?
Here.
Representative Keller?
Here.
Chair Lynn?
Here. Okay. Good morning, everybody. We intend to hear three bills today. If possible, I'd like to move all these bills if it's possible. The first bill we're going to be hearing is SB 127, Vehicle Transaction Agents, sponsored by Senator Giesel, HGR 32, Protection of Christian Syrians, by Representative Sadler, and Official Languages of the State, by Representative Chris Tompkins. That's HB 216, and we're going to begin with the Vehicle Transaction Agent. So the sponsor come forward. I would appreciate it. And we're going to have, we had to move a CS on this. And good morning, Senator Giesel.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
When I move the CS, would you care to explain whatever changes there are in the CS? Or do you rather?
I'm going to have my staff talk to you about the changes in the CS.
Okay.
Would that be all right?
That'd be fine.
Would you like him to do that now, sir?
Yes.
Okay. Through the chair, members of the committee, it's a very simple change in the CS. My name is Forrest Wolf, staff to Senator Kathy Giesel. It's basically just kind of cleaning up some of the language in the bill, changing some of the mays to shells, and then, it allows the DMV to honor the current agreements while the department promulgates and adopts regulations, and allows the department to begin providing the 15% retained commissions on the effective date of the bill without waiting for enabling those regulations.
Okay. Any questions about that? Thank you. Senator Giesel, would you describe the bill in general?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman, for hearing the bill, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Senator Kathy Giesel. I represent District N. That's the hillside of Anchorage, the communities of Turnagain Arm, and the communities of the north half of the Kenai Peninsula. So Senate Bill 127 actually continues to support a strong private-public partnership in the Division of Motor Vehicles. About 10 years ago, the concept of making the Division of Motor Vehicles more available, convenient, and responsive was hatched, so to speak. It was brought into reality. At that time, the Advanced Business Partnerships were formed, and they started doing contract work for DMV. They provide vehicle titles and renewals, registration renewals, duplicate registration, lost license plates, lost tabs, transfers of plates, driving record transactions for truck drivers, and other functions. The business partnerships are run by car dealerships and private companies located all over the state. The locations are convenient, the hours are convenient, the service is prompt. In fact, this is a process that's used by the Department of Fish and Game. I would wager that many of you get your fishing licenses at the local hardware store or Fred Meyer. Same concept. Department of Fish and Game allows these businesses to transact these license transactions for you. Very convenient. You can buy your fishing gear there at the same time. So that same idea was carried over into the Division of Motor Vehicles. Now, here's the difference, however. ADF&G allows Fred Meyer and Walmart and your local grocery store to retain a small fee for this out of what you pay for your fishing license. And that helps cover the cost. They have to, of course, have personnel there. They have the little carbon copy form they give out for your license. And then they transfer that the rest of the money over to ADF&G. The difference, however, is DMV does not allow their business partners to do that. All of the cost of the services to you at one of the business partners is incurred by the business partners themselves. Now, a few of the private businesses will charge you an extra fee, and that's how they help cover the costs. Interestingly, this concept has resulted in a huge shift in customers going to DMV. The yellow line on this graph shows the increase in business by these small business partners. You can see that it's been going up over the years. This top line is the transactions conducted by DMV themselves. So you can see that's been declining while the business partners have been increasing. An evidence that we consumers prefer the more convenient hours, convenient locations. Right now, these business partners are doing more than 25% of DMV's work. So the goal of this bill is to allow them to retain some of the fee to cover their costs because, of course, they're having to provide the facilities, pay the utilities, have the printers, the credit card systems, the office supplies, computers, and all of that, and the personnel. As you know, the cost of personnel for any business is the highest cost. The transactions they perform for DMV are much more complex than when you go buy your fishing license at Walmart or wherever. Instead of a little carbonated form, it's actually a computerized system. There's more complex transactions. So it does actually cost quite a bit more than simply your fishing license. So what this bill would do would be allow those businesses to keep 15% of the fee, and the rest of the fees, of course, go on to DMV. Now, at the same time that they are collecting the fees for DMV, these business partners are also collecting the local taxes. All of you live in communities that charge a motor vehicle tax. And so these businesses are also collecting that tax for your local municipality or city. There's 16 communities that charge a tax on your vehicles. So they'll be collecting that. All of that tax money will go on to DMV. DMV retains 8% of that tax money for having collected it for your various local governments, and they send the rest of it on to the local government. So as you can see, DMV itself retains some of that tax fee because they understand they have overhead they have to cover. So I mentioned that 25% of DMV's workload now is done by these local businesses. We did some calculations. It's over 336,000 transactions per year. If DMV were to collect or were to cover these over 336,000 transactions, they would have to hire 32 new state employees. So these private businesses are doing the work of approximately 32 state employees. If these businesses were able to retain 15%, you see on your fiscal note that the fiscal note is approximately, it's just shy of $2 million. To hire 32 new state employees would be just shy of $2 million. This is actually a net zero fiscal note. And we have not calculated in the three supervisors that would be needed for the 32 new employees. So again, it's virtually a zero fiscal note. So what this would do, what would the bill ultimately do? Continue the convenience services, continue the time savings for citizens who don't have to take time off from work to stand in line at DMV. They can go after hours or on a Saturday. Convenient community locations, weekend hours, and it's a small step toward reducing the size of state government. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. I know when we first talked about this, I misunderstood part of I've actually used the service of one of these outfits. I have a recreational trailer, and I had a registration problem, and I got that taken care of. A little outlet on Abbott, that's all they do. But I didn't understand at that time. I think there's something only about 11 or so of those throughout the state. But the great majority of the folks who provide this service are connected to car dealerships and other things. So we almost have two different categories there. Is that correct?
There are 11 business partners that are standalone private businesses. There are 37 auto dealers that also perform these services. So altogether, 48 locations.
And I know last time I bought a car, which has been a while now, they said, do you want to go down to DMV and stand in line and get the registration, or would you like us to do it? Well, like, duh. So I had them do it.
Okay. Good idea.
Any questions from the committee? Okay. Please remain there for a moment. We have Tim Toth, who I'm open public testimony. Tim Toth and the Auto Dealers Association, are you there?
I'm here.
Good morning, sir. Please identify yourself and give us your testimony.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Tim Toth. I'm the Vice President of the Alaska Auto Dealers Association.
Okay, please give us your testimony.
All righty. Good morning again. I just wanted to, before I get into the bill a little bit, kind of give everyone a background on some of the environment some dealers are operating in right now, and it'll lead to the support of the bill. Some of you may be aware, we were involved in a class action lawsuit and about wage and hour and overtime, and some of you actually down there in Juneau helped us get through this, but even with a letter from Commissioner Bloomer supporting our position, we still lost the suit just because, basically the judge followed the law as it's written rather than the spirit of it. And this, you know, we pay people the way everybody gets paid down in the lower 48 and the rest of the dealers around here. But anyways, that's over. Now we've got another class action lawsuit that started again, and even though we've talked with Ed Sniffen over the years and followed everything that he recommended, we're back in the same boat again. So obviously we have tons of expenses that we expect to have with that. The dealerships themselves are absorbing a lot of expenses, additional expenses as far as property taxes, utilities. Health care has gone up exponentially. Manufacturers are putting multi-million-dollar demands on dealerships for the facilities themselves, and that's just to upgrade. Not really to upgrade, just to make sure that the dealerships look the same as they do here, as they do in every other city. And that's been shown that it doesn't provide any more business to the dealership, just an expense. And that's stuff that the manufacturer is requiring that we do. So combined with that, more dealerships entering the market, it splits the pie a little bit thinner. And it's really, it's basically we're getting financially pushed in all directions. So it's getting more and more difficult to absorb these costs. And I'm not sure who the person was that put this deal together where the dealerships collected all the DMV fees and the taxes on behalf of the state and then passed them on over to the state. That guy was a heck of a salesman, whoever pulled that off, for us to absorb all the costs and the collection and the employment of the person to do that. So basically, we really need the support. The 15% that we're asking for is not going to cover all the expenses on this bill, or rather on our what we have to do is for people and benefits, but it's going to help some. The best thing, actually, financially for the dealers would be to give the whole burden back to the state. But the dealers have decided they'll take on some of that burden just because of the convenience that it provides to our customers. We're willing to take some of that. But anyways, it's important that we get this. Some of the dealers have voiced their opinion that they're not willing to continue this program anymore. Without the 15%, it's just too much. We're getting pinched by too many different sides financially to carry this burden any further. So I hope you can pass this bill today for us.
Thank you very much, sir. Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Tim, for your testimony. Question, what would happen if auto dealers were not able to or decided not to participate in the DMV program anymore? What would that affect beyond consumers?
Beyond consumers?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if the dealers decided not to participate anymore, then we would that burden would be shifted back to the state like it was in years past, as all the DMV applications for title would be delivered to the DMV, and then the DMV would be required to process them.
And through the all chair, up. Yes, thank you. So walk that through a little bit more, please, because I can't remember what it was like back then. I'm sure you must have bought some cars. Okay, so you go to an auto dealer, I buy a car, And if you're not offering the service, then you're what do I do with the paperwork? I take it down to DMV, or you've taken it down to DMV. I don't get a license plate at the moment, or I do. I mean, remind me again.
Years ago, the application for title and DMV would be printed out at the dealership, and then at the end of business, a courier would bring those applications for title and registrations to the DMV and drop them off there. They had a special section there that was for dealers that would accept them. And then they would process them, and then the DMV would mail them out once the plates and
follow-up
were done.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what you do is quite a convenience, because it removes the burden of us having to take several extra steps. And a lot of us, we hear testimony that people can't even testify during the workday, let alone get out and take care of DMV matters and et cetera. So this would actually provide, allow for a benefit that consumers have gotten really used to continue, is what you're saying.
Correct. Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, it is a huge convenience for the customer, and it is good for the dealerships, of course, to keep their customers happy and to keep them coming back in, and that's why the dealers are willing to accept some of the cost of this. You know, the 15% is not going to cover our true cost of providing this service, but the dealers have accepted the other responsibilities.
Thank you very much. Representative Gaddis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess my question is, do the dealerships have the opportunity or option to say, no, they don't want to do this, it just doesn't cost out, and so their customers, even though they're giving their customers a service, that do they have that opportunity to opt out? And I guess this would be for Mr. Toth, if you're there.
I am still here. I don't know if I can answer that. I don't know. I can't say. I mean, most dealers that I know do have DMV clerks, but I don't know if that was mandated from the state or not.
And
thank you. I'd like to ask it to the sponsor. Maybe they may know.
Yes. Would one of you sponsor?
And here's where I'm coming from. I'm very pro-private business, I don't care to stand in line either. I'll pay the extra surcharge and have to not stand in line, because even though it costs extra, time is money as well. And so to pivot from the DMV or pivot from a governmental agency to have a private agency do it is part and parcel of what I think that we would like to do through a lot of different government agencies. But that being said, I don't care to have to force a car agency to do it if they don't think it's paying and it doesn't work for them. I see it as a service to me as a customer, and I may make that choice to go to another car dealership that makes it convenient to me. But at the end of the day, they should have that choice. So I would ask through the chair, the bill sponsor, do the agency have that choice?
Representative Gaddis, through the chair, what I do know is 37 auto dealers provide this service. I suspect there are more than 37 auto dealers in the state, so it sounds to me like this is optional. I believe there are folks, other folks on the phone that might have absolute insight into this question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And if I could add one thing in that, too, just so we're clear, is that the auto dealers do not charge an extra fee for this service, like some of the other outfits that have standalone DMV services. The dealers aren't charging extra to the customer.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gaddis.
And I guess my question would be, could the auto dealers charge an extra fee like the other agencies do? I mean, I would think, again, as a business, they have that opportunity, and if they don't or do, it's up to us, the customer, to make that choice if we want to go there. So, Mr. Toth, do you know, can you charge an extra fee if you should choose?
I would say that we could. I'll be real honest with you, in this litigious world that we're living in right now, and every time I turn around, I got more papers on my desk from someone serving me, I'd be scared to death to. It wouldn't be worth it. But I think we could, yes.
And there are other places, I assume, where we could put that money if you needed to. Okay. Thank you very much, sir. I'm intrigued here. We have on the line auto dealer. I have a Bob Lynn wants to call in. Are you a child I didn't know about? Are you online, sir?
I think there's a confusion in the name. My name is Troy Jarvis. I was asking for House State Affairs Bob Lynn when I called in.
Well, that clears that up. I'll cancel my appointment with an attorney here.
Sorry for the confusion, sir.
Okay. Since I have you on the line, do you have any comment? You're down for questions only.
No, I'd like to make a statement, and then I'd be open for questions. I think I can clear up some of the questions that were unanswered as well.
Okay, you cleared up the important one, but you go ahead with the rest of it.
Mr. Chair, he's on the record, so if you would.
Yes, sir. Would you give us your actual name?
Yes, sir. It's Troy Jarvis, J-A-R-V-I-S, with Alaska Auto Dealers, and I represent Lithia Auto Dealers as well.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Chairman, for allowing me to speak this morning. Much of the same comments that Tim made, but some different points. I've been born and raised in Alaska. I've been in the automotive business for over 35 years, so I've seen the before and the after effects. We've been doing the DMV at the dealerships for over 10 years for free, and our expenses have risen, and our margins have shrunk, and while we want to provide this service to the customer, the 15% that we're asking for would only offset a portion of our expenses. And we're still willing to bear the other expense because we feel it's a good value for the state and provides a better customer service both for our customers and allows DMV to provide better service for their retail customers. Does anybody remember 10-plus years ago the hours of wait at DMV? I certainly do, and I remember the extra lines, and it was like a nightmare to go to DMV because of the wait, and everybody had to make a special trip and a special day just to go visit DMV. So I think that we and the business partners have helped offset some of that burden on the DMV to make it an easier visit to DMV and get in and out of there to get a new license or a renewal right now in a half hour to an hour versus several hour wait that we had in years past. We need the support of the state. We want to continue doing this, but if we can't get any support, obviously we're considering giving the burden back to the state to do the transactions as it was back in the day. And, you know, it's becoming too expensive for us to shoulder 100% of the expense, not to mention the time it would take to train. The state would have to train 32 people plus supervisors. And how many people do you have to hire to maintain 32 people? Their turnover, the long-term expense as employee expenses rise, that money we're talking about is today's expense. What would it be in 5 years or 10 years? And the effect it would have on customer service, because you couldn't just magically hire 32 people today to handle all this extra business. And so it would turn back to like it was in, years ago when we had long lines at DMV. So we want to continue helping the state. We just want to make it fair as it is in the comparisons that Senator Giesel brought up. So we feel this is a fair compromise for everybody, and we want to provide good customer service for everybody. As far as the question that you posed, we certainly could give it back to the state to do right now. We don't think it would be good for us to try to charge a fee. Car dealers already have the perception that we're making profits, and to try to charge a customer extra right now, we don't feel would be in good spirit with car dealers and customer relations. So before we charge the fee, we would probably give it back to the state to have them handle the process.
Thank you very much.
Is there any other questions I can answer?
That'll do it. It's okay that you're making a profit. Businesses are supposed to make a profit. Okay.
I understand. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Melissa Kukulu? Did I pronounce that correctly? Alaska Tax
Yes,
and Title.
Yes, my name is Melissa Kukulu.
Okay. Please give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Melissa Kukulu, the general manager for Alaska Tags and Title. The private sector provides staffing, facilities, required technology, and office supplies to process transactions to create millions in revenue for the state of Alaska. This legislation would allow Alaskan-owned businesses to hire additional employees, open new facilities, provide extended hours, create more options for Alaskan residents, and it would help us offset incurred credit card fees. Senate Bill 127 is about fairness, and it is a win-win for Alaskan residents. It's a win for the private sector, a win for the state government by reducing overhead costs and still generating income. I'd like to thank you for your time and consideration of this bill.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. We have Avis Thompson. Are you there, sir?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm here.
Good morning. Please identify yourself and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Aves Thompson. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Trucking Association. The Alaska Trucking Association is a statewide trade association representing the interests of our nearly 200 member companies from Barrow to Ketchikan. ATA is also a business partner with the Division of Motor Vehicles. I'm here today to testify in favor of Senate Bill 127 dealing with business partners with DMV. We were approached in late December 2006 to see if the association was interested in becoming a DMV business partner. As we evaluated the proposal, the ATA felt that this could be a good member benefit for our trucking members to facilitate the handling of our members' DMV transactions. Our members have benefited from our partnership, as has the general public that walks into our office each day. Our customers are about half, about half commercial vehicle operators and half are walk-in personal vehicle operators. Our association member companies enjoy the prompt service that we give them, and members pay a lower fee for our DMV services. Our walk-in customers are a cross-section of the Anchorage population. Our service is generally prompt, friendly, supportive, and helpful. Our customers appreciate the extra effort we put into these transactions to make the DMV experience a little more user-friendly. In order for the ATA to better serve its customers, we feel that a modest 15% commission on the work done for the state DMV is a small price to pay for the work that we're doing, for which the business partners receive no compensation from the state. Every workday since 2006, we've processed transactions for the state of Alaska with no compensation other than the nominal service fee that we charge our customers. DMV provides some supplies, such as title and registration forms, tags for the license plates, and the license plates themselves. It has been our business partner responsibility to provide and pay for personnel, reception space, secure office space, dedicated computer systems, and related technical support, copiers, paper, postage, and credit card fees. Our business has grown over the years. Compensation became an issue as we realized that we need more income to finance our growth. We've had to borrow money to make the payment schedules to DMV, and to my knowledge, we have not missed a settlement deadline since 2006. In 2013, we processed more than 11,000 transactions for DMV, and generated revenue of more than $1.6 million in fees and local taxes. As mentioned earlier, local taxes are passed through DMV to local governments, so not only do we generate revenue for the state of Alaska, we are a tax collector for the local governments. Our calculations indicate of that $1.6 million, we generated a total of more than $1.1 million in fee revenue for DMV. This CS will allow DMV to honor current agreements during the time it takes for the Department to promulgate and adopt regulations covering the agreement prerequisites and provisions set out in statute. It will allow the Department to begin the 15% at the effective date of the bill. The bill language is clear in that all proceeds, with the exception of municipal taxes, are eligible for the 15% retained commissions. These changes also provide a 15% retained commission rather than a sliding scale from 0 to 15%.
Thank
we
you
believe
very much,
that
sir.
The business partners are providing a valuable supplement to capabilities without increasing operating costs. We also believe that as a matter of fairness, DMV business partners should be compensated for the service they provide for the state. It boils down to sharing the revenue with the partner to generate the revenue. Business partners have become a way of delivering DMV services, and the partners need to share in the revenue for the work that is being done to enable the partners to grow their business and improve their service to our fellow citizens. We urge the committee to look favorably on the CS for Senate Bill 127. Thank you for your attention, and I will be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, sir. Amy Erickson, DMV, are you online?
I am, Mr. Chairman.
Would you make some brief comments about what you've heard so far and the official position of the DMV on this?
I'd be happy to. Senator Geisel is correct. DMV yes. has been partnering with businesses to conduct title and registration transactions since the 2000s. The partnerships are comprised of DMV services storefronts, car and snow machine dealerships, credit unions, and banks. DMV provides business partners with all of the supplies needed to conduct title and registration transactions, including license plates, month and year tabs, forms, commercial, non-commercial, and motorcycle driver manuals, as well as handicap placards, all free of charge. The DMV also provides free training to process transactions and free access to its database. The business partners charge fees for services that are not regulated by DMV. While the business partners make up approximately 26% of DMV's revenues, these businesses do not function autonomously. DMV still touches each and every transaction conducted by a business partner. In fact, each DMV transaction has three separate components that must be completed before it's closed out. The first part is the initial transaction where fees are collected, and the second is the auditing to verify the receipts of all required information and that the forms are filled out correctly, and the third is the reconciliation to verify that all fees were received and put into the correct fee code. So you see business partners conduct about 30% of the transaction, where DMV conducts about the other 70%. We have a staff of seven people dedicated to support the everyday operations of the business partners. We serve as a de facto help desk, spending hours reviewing, approving, and correcting documents. And when errors are made, DMV uses its resources to resolve them. We are also moving to more online transactions. About 48% of all of our vehicle transactions are conducted online, and we are working on legislation this session, in fact, to be able to do even more services online.
Thank you very much. Okay. Anybody else online who would like to testify? Okay. Anybody in the audience who would like to testify? Not. We're going to close.
Mr. Chair, can I moderator? We have someone here.
Okay. Please identify yourself.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Dwayne Bannock in Kenai, Alaska.
Good morning, Dwayne. Identify
good morning, sir, and let me just begin by saying I consider it an honor and a privilege to speak to you good people here in the make a return to the House State Affairs Committee. Thanks for hearing me today. I'll be very brief. As a person who has been a champion for the business partnership program, both in my career as a state bureaucrat as well as my new career, I have a financial affiliation with a small used car operation. We use a business partnership exclusively to perform our customers' title and registration work, not putting that on the burden of the local DMV office. Mr. Chairman, let me just give you just a teensy-weensy bit of philosophy. I'll make 2 points and then I'll go away or stand for questions. The purpose behind the business partnership expansion was solely limited to one major factor, and that major factor is the time and convenience and courtesy to the rest of the residents of the state of Alaska that must go to a DMV office. The expansion of the business partnership was designed to take the load off. It was not designed to be a cost-saving effect. It was designed to be a time-saving effect. And anyone, you've heard testimony earlier today about years gone by and hours of wait time at DMV. I submit to you the business partnership program, as illustrated by the graph that Senator Geisel showed you, is the number one reason why that time has decreased. Finally, second point, there's been a tremendous amount of conversation about the fee or surcharge that is collected by a certain number of the business partnerships, 11 of them, I believe it was testified to. Ladies and gentlemen, I would refer you to Alaska Statutes 2810-421-2. That's 2810-421, item 2, registration fee rates. An additional fee of $10 shall be added to the registration fee set out in this section for registration not conducted by mail or not conducted at an emission inspection station or contract office offering vehicle registration services. For the state of Alaska or for any legislator to somehow criticize the surcharge, in my humble opinion, sir, is the proverbial pot calling the kettle black. And with that, I'll conclude my testimony, and I'll stand for any questions. Thank you again for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Mr. Van Hagen. Thank you for your service on DMV for so long. And I'm going to close public testimony. Concluding remarks, Senator Giesel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just would urge passage of this bill out of committee today. It is about convenience, but it's also about fairness. These business partners have been doing work for the state for free. I also call your attention to a press release that came from this body, from another committee. I will quote from it. The Division of Motor Vehicles Director testified that they brought in $48 million surplus. $48 million surplus from DMV in fiscal year 2013 from registration fees. Mr. Chairman, I would opine that $2 million of that actually belongs to the private sector business partners. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much for bringing the bill before us. We're going to go to the committee now, committee discussion. Any discussion from the committee? If not, I'll entertain a motion from someone.
Chair
Keller.
Mr. Chair, I want to first adopt, for the record, 28LS1263, Charlie, Senate Bill, CS for Senate Bill 127. And
any objection to that? Okay, no objection. Go ahead.
I'd like to move this excellent bill. Thank you to the sponsor. House CS for Senate Bill 127, 28LS1263, Charlie. From committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Thank you very much for bringing the bill. Without objection, the bill passes. We'll take a short at ease while we do the paperwork. House State Affairs Committee, please come back to order. Next bill on our agenda this morning is a CS for House Joint Resolution number 32. Title of which is Urging the United States Government to Condemn Violent Acts of Religious Persecution and Seek a Peaceful Resolution to the Conflict in Syria. Mr. Vice Chair, will you move the CS, please?
Yeah, Chair Lynn. I move that we adopt CS for House Joint Resolution number 32, version LS1532, November.
Okay. Without objection, that moves. Good morning, Representative Saddle. Please introduce yourself and introduce your bill.
Thank you, Chair. I want to make sure and turn my gizmo off.
Okay, we need more donuts.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much, members of the State Affairs Committee. For the record, this is Representative Dan Sadler, House District 12. I appreciate you hearing this resolution this morning. Mr. Chairman, Alaskans have a rich tradition of a willingness to live and let live. We respect our mutual right to believe and behave as our conscience dictates and to tolerate those of other ethnic, cultural, and religious backgrounds. Many Alaskans also have a strong connection to what residents used to call the Holy Land, which is the countries of Israel, Egypt, Lebanon, and Syria. It's the birthplace of Christianity. The Apostle Paul had his conversion in Syria on the road to Damascus, as I'm sure you all know. And that's why Alaskans care about this area, and that's the reason for this resolution. Now, certainly, Mideast upheaval is not new, and I cannot blame anybody for not paying attention to the events in Syria. But constituents of mine who worship at St. John's Orthodox Church in Eagle River brought this situation to my attention out of concern for their fellow Christians in Syria. Now, Syria has been in civil war since the Arab Spring of 2011. It's frankly become a political and warfare nightmare with different Muslim sects, different al-Qaeda factions, jihadi groups, and Christians all fighting each other. It's a mess, and I couldn't unpick and explain it if I tried. But what's important is that in the middle of this civil war, Christians and Christian churches appear to have been the targets of systematic attacks. Innocent women and children have been murdered, Christians are being kidnapped and massacred, forced to convert on pain of death, and Christian churches are being burned, desecrated, and destroyed. Now, Syrian Christians make up about maybe 8% of the 22 million people in Syria, but they make up nearly 25% of the 2 million refugees of the civil war and unrest. They're not safe no matter what side they support, and many fear for their lives. Two very senior Orthodox Christian clerics, I'll pronounce these Yohani Ibrahim and Boulos Yazigi, were kidnapped almost a year ago in Aleppo, the largest city in Syria. An Orthodox nun, Mother Pelagia Saif, and dozens of orphan children in her care were also kidnapped from the monastery of St. Tekla in Malua. Now, mercifully, Mother Saif and the orphans were released in March after 3.5 months of captivity, and this new version of the resolution reflects that happy news. But the bishops and others remain in captivity, and the destruction of churches in the cradle of Christianity continues. It's been said that all is necessary for evil to triumph is for good men and women to do nothing, and that's why we can't do much here in Alaska. We can raise our collective voices against these crimes. This resolution, HJR 32, calls on our nation to exercise our moral authority and its diplomatic influence to seek an end to the civil war in Syria and an end to the atrocities committed against people of faith and against their houses of worship. Thank you for your attention. I'll be glad to answer what questions I can. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much for bringing this bill before us.
Thank you, sir.
You know, it's situations like this make us appreciate the United States of America and the freedom of religion that we have here. I think sometimes we take that for granted, and we should never take it for granted. We have freedom of religion, and what a marvelous thing to believe or not to believe, our personal choice. Any questions or comments from the committee?
Just one.
Representative Isaacson.
I also want to say thank you for bringing this forward. It's one thing to criticize each other and maybe have verbal assault, but it's another to have deadly assault. And this is happening throughout the world, and this draws attention. And appreciate, as we look at human rights and cultural rights and other things today, this is significant and fitting. So I appreciate you also bringing this for our deliberation, and hopefully this will be a message that we pass through the House and the Senate, and it resounds.
Thank you, sir.
Any other questions or comments from the committee? Anybody online to testify? Anybody in the room to testify? Take your at ease while I read the note. We're back on the record. Okay, any other comments? Anything? I'll invite a motion from the vice chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move HGR 32 version November.
We haven't adopted our 32.
Yeah, we adopted that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's right. I think we did. From committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Okay. Without objection, the bill passes. Thank you for bringing it.
Thank you very much.
Really very important bill before us. We're taking it at ease while we do the paperwork. We're back on the record. We'll now be hearing again House Bill 216. And I won't read the title. This is about native languages. And to bring us up to date, this is the second hearing on this bill. And we had an amendment on the table, and events have occurred since then. And so I believe the sponsor of that amendment is Representative Keller. Is that correct? I would ask you to rescind your whatever it is.
Mr. Chair, we have a version uniform before us now, and I remove my amendment that was proposed by the sponsor, and I think we call that U1 or number one. But I'll withdraw that amendment.
Thank you very much. Without objection. Okay, now we have a CS, and I'd ask Reverend Isaacson to move the CS.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move CS for House Bill number 216-blank, version 28-LS0905-P for committee deliberation.
Okay, without objection. Reverend Isaacson, would you or the sponsor, either one, explain the CS?
The sponsor and I worked together on this, and after our last meeting, we had good dialogue with folks in the back, and the concern that we had was about official. Our concern was that it was intent language. Intent language doesn't travel with the bill, and so we worked together to find a way to put intent language as specific language in the bill so that it's very clear, so that the purpose of recognizing our cultures and our languages is met without putting a corresponding obligation, unintended, of an expense of printing in all 21 languages and so forth that would ultimately not be what we're looking for. This does not restrict municipalities or the state or anyone else from conducting bilingual meetings, as happens in some parts. But it also wouldn't require all 21 languages to be spoken at the same meeting, which would not be feasible. So that's the intent, and so I'm very glad to be able to move this with the sponsor.
Okay. Without objection, we move that CS. Reverend Christ Tompkins, do you have any comments you'd like to make at this point? And then we're going to go to some testimony here.
Sure. Thank you, Chairlin. I'd like to thank the members of the committee for their cooperation and collaboration.
Thank you very much. We'll open public testimony. I request you to keep it brief. But before I do, I'd ask everybody in the audience who favors this bill to please stand up, and I ask the TV cameras to swing around and record that. It looks fairly unanimous. Okay. I'm going to try to read this. Thank you very much. You sit down now.
Well, that was
Watuatachi. That's the way you say it. Somebody correct me.
Watuatachi.
I think that means welcome. I hope I didn't say anything incorrectly. I'm not a language genius. Okay, we have I'd like to invite Wordman. Let's go here. Okay, Lance Pitchell, are you online or in the room? Please come forward.
Selena
Everson is there. Yeah. Thank you very much for coming before us. Please identify yourself and make whatever comments you would like.
I said good morning and thank you for letting us testify. I want to say briefly the impact of being forbidden your native tongue in your own land. There's an elder from Angoon. He's 90 years old. He breaks down to cry when he remembers how we were forbidden. And my brother's at Sheldon Jackson School, forbidden to speak your tongue on the school grounds. They used to jump up in the air to say some words in our language. I sure do not want anyone to forbid us to speak our language. Our language is our very being. It's our culture. We were brought up with such respect to each other, to the Tlingit people, the Haida people, the Tsimshian people, the Yupik, the whole state of Alaska with all the different languages being spoken. It would be an honor to be recognized. That is our culture, it is our language, it is our very heart and soul. Gunashish.
Thank you very much. And would you please identify yourself for our folks over here? They have to record that.
Selena Everson, representing Alaska Native Sisterhood, which will be 100 years old in 2015. The Brotherhood celebrated their 100 years in 2012.
Excellent. Did you get that? Very good. Thank you very much for your moving testimony. And I'd like to call next on to Paul Berg. Which one?
I think he wants
to take one. Well, Lance Pritchell. Right? I beg your pardon.
It's okay.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Gunashish to the chair and members of this honorable committee. My name is Hwane Lance Twitchell, and I'm a professor of Alaska Native Languages at the University of Alaska Southeast. I am testifying in support of House Bill 216 as a voting citizen of this great state of Alaska. I am in search of equal rights in terms of language recognition. I represent myself, but I also represent every person in this room and elsewhere who have asked me to speak for them today. I will speak in the language of our grandparents, and I say our grandparents because you are here with me on this land, where this wonderful Tlingit language has been spoken for about 9,000 years longer than the English language has been in existence. I do not say that to try and establish a hierarchy. Diversity is not about who is best. Diversity is, in fact, appreciating the beauty of all things without having to compare it to yourself, without having it be yourself.
Yahuchi ayi
우신 틀샷 예수 하유가 당기텐 탓게 야이기 세가는 어째야 아흐트 찬키사니 예스 양호웨이 인가흐타니 택하트 이사 아흐코아 택 아흐릴코 하스 이사 아흐 아흐카 켄크 이사 아흐이닷 하트 하스 우와앗 아 야누난 우한 이 왁시 이 허웨 야누난 하유흐 탕키 하이티드시 Self-respecting people, please listen carefully. Our language is our life breath. It is the last thing. Through our language, we are still holding each other's hands, yesterday, today, tomorrow. Because of this, for my little grandchildren, I am speaking to you. But it is not me that you hear, no. You hear the voices of my grandparents. You hear my magnificent uncles. They have come here, yes. We are dying. Right before your eyes, our languages are dying. Help us. Someone has taken all the fish out of the sea. They are on the beaches, gasping for air. I hear someone say, how did this happen? Oh, no. Someone else says, let's form a committee to talk about our options. Let's preserve them where they are in this condition. Yet another suggests a statewide holiday for the dying fish, a resolution of support. If you could speak their languages, you would hear how they are screaming. It would tear you apart if you could hear them. But listening is not what it used to be. Now let me tell you this. These fish did not decide to get out of the ocean. They did not outgrow their need for it. No. They were tortured as children for speaking their languages. Tortured. If you think this type of thing happened long time ago, then you should know that it happened to people in this very room. Such suffering. If you don't know what to do, then I'll tell you. You put them back in the sea. You get as many people together as you can and work together very quickly to undo what has been done. You fix things. There is no humane counter-argument to this. We are here today for our elders who have suffered tremendously to keep our languages alive. They were beaten, humiliated, and tortured in schools sanctioned by state and federal governments and run by churches. We are here for our parents. Many of them lived a life without their languages and feel left out, alone, isolated, lost. We are here for our combat veterans who shed blood for this country and state. There were code talkers in World War II who used Alaska Native languages to help win battles and wars. We are here for our children who are killing themselves in record numbers. Our children are killing themselves. This is more than symbolic. This is historic. History will not remember you for specialized license plates and parking ticket processes. History will remember you for this moment right here, what you say and do when we ask you to help us live, to find a brighter future for our languages, cultures, and people. If you are worried about racial divisions because you choose to recognize us as equals, then you must understand this. You cannot have multiculturalism in Alaska and monolingualism at the same time. You just get language death. The greatest way to achieve unity is to look at your fellow man and say, you are of equal value. You are of equal value. This bill will make Alaska the only other state in the nation to officially recognize indigenous languages. 2 out of 50 who have the vision to see what we can do together to end suffering, humiliation, and racial superiority. Hawaii is the other, and they are the only ones who are reversing language shift, which means they are producing more speakers than they are losing. People cannot be something other than what they were born to be, which is coded in their languages. These languages root people, whether they are Alaska Native or not, to a place. This is what unity feels like. This bill is restorative justice, a step in the right direction. By elevating Alaska Native languages at the highest level, you will help us combat addiction, depression, suicide, violent crimes, and high school dropout rates. You will create a better Alaska by overcoming outdated notions that we are inferior. Igwayakwan, have courage, and vote yes now and on the floor. We will share with you the joy
of overcoming the worst of times. Gunas Chish, thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Eloquent. Paul Berg, are you here? Thank you, sir. Introduce yourself.
My name is Paul Berg. I'm speaking for myself, and I am a school teacher. I've been a teacher since 1971, in Alaska since 1977. Done many things in multicultural education, including being part of President Bush's Indian Nations at Risk Task Force about 20 years ago. And I want to share a story with you that may not sound initially like it has to do with native languages, but bear with me, it does. Last Friday, I came home from a war. I didn't know, but people said, be at the university, be at the tech center at noon. When I got there, there was a huge projected image of the legislative chambers, and a senator was there saying Alaska was going to address a wrong, and he handed the mic to a Vietnam vet, and he started telling about when he arrived home, and people spat on his uniform. He couldn't get a cab to take him to his house, and he was overcome with emotion as he started to describe this. And I sat there, and suddenly I was in San Francisco in 68, standing in formation, just arrived home, and people came with garbage cans filled with filth, and they threw it on our uniforms. And I tried to maintain myself. The man next to me was overwhelmed. He started sobbing. We were not prepared for this. And I sat there in the room. It was an emotional time. And the senator says, your names have been entered in the registry. You're getting a welcome home certificate from the state of Alaska. And at the end of that ceremony, I felt as though a spike had been removed from the core of my soul. It was a healing that was incredible. And I thank you and the legislature for doing that in the state of Alaska. One thing we veterans have never said, we don't say they spit on us or they threw garbage at us. We say they did it on our uniform. The uniform was where we had been, what we had done, and it represented our friends who didn't come back with us. That's what made it so hurtful. And through the years that I've traveled and worked with villages in Alaska, especially the YK Delta, where I work during the summers now, I see the same pain. Many of the people my age, I'm 60 in my 69th year, had the language which clothed them assaulted and torn away from them through officially sanctioned physical and emotional brutality, and they bear these wounds like a spike in the soul. And the pain does not only stay with them, it goes frequently to their children and to their grandchildren. It's called secondary post-traumatic stress. And this is a historic moment for the legislature. You have an opportunity to right a great wrong, a second great wrong. The opportunity to restore balance, an opportunity to begin healing a great open and festering wound. And I would ask you, please extend the same kindness, the same healing you extended to me on Friday by welcoming these languages and their speakers home at last. Thank you very much.
Welcome home, sir. That's what Vietnam veterans say. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to close public testimony. I'd like to thank everybody who testified and everybody who come to the chamber here to hear this very important bill. And any comments from the prime sponsor of the bill? One of the prime sponsors, I should say.
One of five, and I'd like to acknowledge Representative Nagyaku. I just saw walk in. I'm not sure if he's still in the room, but I was completely unfamiliar with Alaska Native languages until I ran for this job. And you know, that's a 23-year-old white kid running around villages of Southeast knocking on doors. And through the process of the campaign, I got to know a woman in Kluwak. She's in her 80s. She's tough as nails. Beautiful, resilient woman whose smile has not aged 1 year with time. And Whenever I go back to Kluwak, which I try to do frequently, as I try to do with all the villages, I go visit her home, and she's a widow now, and she's a fluent speaker of Tlingit. And sometimes when I stop by to visit her and to catch up on how she's doing and hear how her bear picking went or whatever transpired that summer, she switches over to Tlingit. And I don't speak Tlingit. I hope to one day. I hope to study it just as I learned Spanish in high school. But when she speaks in Tlingit, you can really see her soul come alive. It is the essence of her being, and it's a beautiful experience for me to have, to be able to interact with someone like that who's, I mean, she's a cultural treasure for Alaska, and as is the Tlingit language and the other native languages of Alaska. And it's been a tremendously gratifying experience for me to be involved in native language work and trying to honor and revitalize these languages. So I'd like to express gratitude to the committee for entertaining this bill, to everyone in the audience who came out today who's been involved in advancing these languages, especially our elders who came out and testify. Thank you, Selena. Thank you, all the elders in Alaska who are the culture bearers of these languages. And this issue and this bill has been the most gratifying part of my short legislative career.
Thank you very much for your comments. You know, here where we are in Alaska, we are Americans. You know, we are Alaskans. We're really brothers and sisters here. Language is more than communication, which it is communication, of course. It's also our heart and our soul, and we can't. Can you imagine trying to think without a language at all? You must have a language to think. I can't imagine trying to think without having some kind of a language. So it goes to our very being on this thing. This bill, should we pass it, it won't fix everything, but it's a long journey, step by step by step. Hopefully we can pass this bill. With that, ready for a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would ask the sponsor to move this bill with full concurrence.
Thank you, Representative Isaacson. Mr. Chair, I move CS for House Bill 216, State Affairs 28/LS0905/P with individual recommendations and accompanying zero fiscal notes.
Okay. Without objection, the bill passes. Thank you very much. I'm going to ask, do we have the schedule for, I think it's Thursday? We have two bills, one bill, I beg your pardon. Thursday, April 3rd, and next here in SCR 17, 150th anniversary of the Alaska Purchase. Without any other comments, we are adjourned, and thank you, everybody.